Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. It is November. We are here on November 1st, 2018. We've made it basically to the halfway point of the NFL season. And we have a frequently requested guest starting here on the show to begin the episode today. Joining us, former NFL offensive lineman, excellent follow on Twitter, professional gambler, I think it's fair to say at this point, it is Jeff Schwartz. Jeff, how are you, buddy?
I mean, when you bet on weekday match action games, I think you are a professional gambler. So yes, that would be accurate. At the time of this taping, I am 3-0 this week so far. It's a MAC action. So I like where I'm at.
MAC expert Jeff Schwartz joining us on the show today. We're not going to talk about the Mac today because I don't know very much about the Mac. Maybe
I don't
in the future. That's promising. What we are going to talk about today on the show is an offense that you're much more familiar with, not only because you played for this head coach in the past, but also your brother, Mitchell Schwartz, is the right tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs, who, I don't know if you've heard, Jeff, but their offense is pretty good so far this year.
They're just a little bit good, yeah. They've been fun. I think they're number one in DVOA, I believe,
yes.
On offense, which is pretty impressive considering you have the Rams offense and the Saints offense. But yeah, they're an efficient group. They don't run a lot of plays, but they score a lot of points.
Yeah, absolutely. They're an excellent offense. So we're going to talk about them today in the first segment of the show. We're going to get into the Raiders with Ted Wynn in the second half, so a slightly less effective offense coming up later on. But let's start with this. I mean, you were a offensive lineman for this team several years ago under Andy Reid, his first year, I believe, in Kansas City,
yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. So when you watch this offense now, how different is it from what you were doing on offense when you were playing offensive line for the Chiefs?
You know, it's not much different. I just think Andy has all the weapons he's wanted. And Joe Banner talks about this often on Twitter, who was with Andy, obviously, in Philly for a while. And he said this is what they tried to do in Philly. They just didn't have all the pieces, and it's just interchangeable parts. And there is a column I'm going to write eventually when I have more time to just show that it's not like an overbearing amount of concepts. It's an overbearing amount of personnel, and they run the same concepts all the time from different formations, different personnel. Right? I mean, they love a play called all go special. It's basically just go routes, but they do it in so many different ways. They use the back out of backfield. Sometimes they score a touchdown this year with Anthony Sherman, the fullback, lining up at a wing in the same play, right? So it's just he has all these weapons to use. And with Pat Mahomes being able to process as quickly as he does and get the ball out, it just all works so well. And this is the dream team he's always wanted.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it's something where maybe when people like me who are laymen are talking about sort of the advanced Chiefs offense and sort of the, you know, the spread concepts coming in from college, do you think it's overstated and it's just more that it's really about the personnel he's acquired versus the, you know, sort of a change in the scheme from what they've been doing?
Yeah, I know that college people love themselves some college offense. I love to talk about infiltrating the NFL, but when you look at the best offense in the NFL, there's almost nothing that's a college concept. The Chiefs run a little bit of their run game that's a college-ish concept from shotgun. They run that kind of zone stretch where they pull a couple linemen. It's very college-esque. Mm-hmm. The Rams, the Saints, the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Panthers do run some of those concepts. You know, just looking at the top DVOA teams, none of them run college concepts. Do they spread out offenses more? Yes, and maybe that's where this idea of they run college concepts comes from. But they're not. They run what they've been running, but they do it from different formations. They spread you out. So if, yeah, you want to say yes, the college influence in the NFL game is a more spread out wide game. Yes, because those are the players you get too from college now. And that's part of it is, you know, you're getting, these wide receivers that are better route runners that run a lot more routes in college. You're getting quarterbacks that are used to throwing the ball more often from shotgun. You get defenders, by the way, you have these hybrid linebackers now that come in the NFL that play like a hybrid safety in college, right? And they get to NFL and they can play, you know, in nickel situations. So you've adapted your personnel in the NFL because that's what you get from college. So if you want to say that's the influence, then yes, I'm all for that. But just to say that, you know, Lincoln Riley's offense is making it to the NFL, I just don't see that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you were, of course, in college, you played for Chip Kelly in Oregon before Chip Kelly came to the NFL. And I think there were sort of the same maybe conversations people were having 7 or 8 years ago where the Patriots were going with tempo, for example. And then it was, oh, well, this is, you know, Chip Kelly's influence. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I mean, do you think that the league is going to continue traveling in that way, where even if it's not the case now, maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years, we're going to see more spread concepts that actually you'll see right now in college on Sundays?
Possibly, but I feel like we just go in cycles, right? So, you mm-hmm. know, you go back to no huddle offense. Well, the Bills did that in the 90s, right?
Right.
They were running no huddle. So it's not a new concept. You know, the RPO is really funny. So the RPO this year has kind of cooled off of being the hot thing, but I remember Brett Favre was talking about doing it in the 90s. Like,
right.
This stuff has been around forever. There's not a lot of quote-unquote new inventions happening. Now, people are finding new ways to use tempo and formations and personnel. That is 100% true. And there are some new plays. There's one I might take a video of, the Rams ran, where they basically, the Gurley touchdown on Sunday mm-hmm. was essentially a screen. It was a great man coverage play. Like, there are plays that are being unique, and teams are making them up as they go. But I think it's the creativity of the formations and then using the tempo with the formations. But I don't see the NFL becoming an outright up-tempo league. If you look at the best offenses, they all huddle.
Yep.
They take their time. The Chiefs don't take their time. They're not an up-tempo offense. The Saints don't do that, right? The Rams tempo, but the Rams don't snap the ball often very quickly. They might line mm-hmm. up quickly and get a look at what's happening on the defense. But we're seeing college teams that snap the ball, what, three times a minute? Like, that's their pace? Like, the high end is three times a minute, I think, mm-hmm. In college football.
I think the umpires are too slow to get that in the NFL at this
that's
point.
That's also true, yes.
I mean, I think because I was always a misnomer when it came to Chip, and again, obviously you would know much better than I would as someone who played there, but I think there was that perception, especially at the time, that Chip's offense was always fast, 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 fast. And I think really it's not about being fast all the time. It's about controlling the tempo. And if you want to go fast, then hey, you can go fast. And if you want to go slow, you don't have to. You can go slow and then go at your own pace and wait at the line of scrimmage and run clock. So I think it's always been sort of a thing that it's always more, it's not as black and white, I think, as people make it out to be.
It's not. Look, Chip Kelly, he loved the tempo, but when we got in the red zone, we would slow things down, right? There are certain times in the game you have to slow it down and kind of see what's ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And so I understand the need to want to do that. Tempo was a big, what Chip did was so unique, because I was there when we first started at Oregon, was that no one was doing this. No
right.
one. There were a couple of teams that Richwad was doing it, right? You have some, you know, some of the Mike Leach, the air raid guys were doing it, but to the point of running the football being the base of your offense, that was the unique part of it. And that we had all these athletes everywhere, but we were still running the football so much. And then the play action pass off the run and the tempo, and that was so unique. And now everyone does it, so it's not as unique anymore. But that was the unique part. It wasn't like an overbearing scheme and concept thing.
Yeah, I mean, and we sort of saw that at the NFL level. Once people got used to the tempo, Chip did seem to struggle more and not really have a plan B. In terms of playing in this offense as an offensive lineman, is it more fun to play in a scheme where you are, you know, throwing the ball as frequently as the Chiefs are? Or do you want to be in a scheme that's sort of more old school and you want to run the football more frequently?
I think as linemen, you want to run the football, but mm-hmm. the Chiefs are throwing the ball quickly. They're not holding the ball very often back there. Their sack rate is really good this year. And it's the offenses you don't want to be in are the ones that hold the ball forever.
Got it.
And you're dropping to 8 or 9 yards, really 9 to 10 yards most of the time. Pat Mahomes sits in that pocket about 7 or 8 yards. And what's made Pat Mahomes, in my opinion, so special, and I was in Kansas City this week, mm-hmm. where my brother had a charity event, so I was able to talk to some of the players, and I saw this on film, but just I wanted to kind of confirm it, is his mental processing, man, it's just way ahead of where I think a lot of us thought it would be, and even what I thought it would be. And when you watch him play, he knows where he's going with the ball before the snap. And that's very impressive, is when you see, you know, he knows before the snap, okay, if I look to the right, look that safety off, I got the guy, you know, in the seam on the left. Like, he knows what he's doing before the snap. And so when you know what you're doing before the snap, the ball is out quickly. He's not getting fooled at all. With offensive linemen, it's not that hard to block for that guy because you know the ball's going to be gone as quickly as it can be. It's obviously the guys where you don't know where the ball's going, where they're indecisive in the pocket, where they get fooled in the coverage. So being able as a quarterback to be so good pre-snap really helps your offensive line post-snap.
So you were talking about this last year. People were sort of complaining during that rough stretch for the Chiefs. Oh, we got to bench Alex Smith. We got to bring in Patrick Mahomes. And you said, well, that doesn't make any sense because he's adjusting to the NFL. It's going to take time for him to get there. And now that he's here and playing at a high level, he is adjusting. He is mentally, playing at a high level. And so I guess I wonder, when you think about the quarterbacks you've seen and when it comes to sort of developing quarterbacks at the NFL level, do you think it is really beneficial for them to sit for that first year? Or is it more just about the player in question as opposed to having any sort of like hard and fast rule?
I think it's the player in question. We've seen where Carson Wentz played the first year, right? He went through his lumps and then he played better. Obviously, would have been the MVP last year. He's having a great year this year, by the way. No one really realizes it because the Eagles are 4-4. Jared Goff, even his first year, went 0-7 in that system. He wasn't going to succeed. And then I don't know how much that helped him or whether it was just Sean McVay coming in. But in the Chiefs situation last year, Pat Mahomes didn't have to play.
Right.
The Chiefs were in the playoffs. Alex Smith was playing well. He had like two or three really bad games. And there was no need to rush Pat Mahomes. Now, do I think he was ready for this last year? No. Just from a mental standpoint. Physically, he had the tools. But he didn't take any reps at all during training camp, during camp, anything, with the ones or twos really even. So just the lack of experience worried me. He played better in Week 17 than I thought he would, which obviously was a positive sign. But I don't think he would have been the same player last year as he was this year. And he credits Alex Smith quite often for his improvement last year and being able to come in right away and play. So I think that was a big part of his success last year, is being able to sit behind Alex Smith. And I'm not always certain that a quarterback can be – I kind of think you're good or not. I mean, I don't know how much Alex Smith truly helped him, but I think that what really helped Pat more than anything else was learning how to prepare from Alex. I think that's one of the most important parts. And it's one thing that Jordan Gross was my guy in Carolina who mentored me. And it wasn't like you do this in this situation on the field. It was more like, hey, this is how you lift. This is how you take care of your body. This is how you watch film. It's more of that stuff. I think people often think when you hear about like Alex Smith mentoring Pat Mahomes, is you say, well, he told him what to do on the field. Not really. It's everything else. And then that leads to playing better on the field.
That makes sense. I would like to learn how to lift. So if I can get Jordan Gross to help me learn how to lift, look like Jordan Gross, I would appreciate that. All right, we'll be back with Jeff here on the show in a second. But first, guys, have you ever had a made-to-measure suit? I'm not the smallest person. Our guest, Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman, he's not the smallest person. He's a very well-dressed man when I've hung out with him in person. I'm not the best well-dressed man, but that's changing now because I can get a made-to-measure suit at Indochino. We're sponsoring the show today. It's the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. As a blogger, as someone who works from home, I'm not going to lie. In the past, I'm someone who's just basically worn sweatpants pretty much all day. That's fun. That's nice, but sometimes I do want to go out. I want to look presentable. I want to look comfortable, and I want to look like I have a suit that actually fits me as a person who is not the easiest person to shop for, the easiest person to fit. And I get to do that at Indochino because you can visit a stylist at their showroom, or you can measure yourself at home and then shop online at Indochino.com. I hate shopping for clothes. I'm not going to lie. It's always uncomfortable. It's always awkward. I prefer shopping at home. I can do that. I can get measured. Don't have to go out. Look at something online, check it out. It looks really great on me. I can choose my design customizations. I can submit the measurements, and then my suit's going to get professionally tailored and mailed to me within a couple of weeks. That's great. Honestly, I mean, it's a game changer when it comes to dressing up in something that's not sweatpants and a t-shirt. That's great sometimes. It's not great all the time. And this week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Barnwell at checkout. That's my last name, Barnwell. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. And even better, get that you're going to have to pay for shipping, you are mistaken, my friend. Shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Barnwell for any premium suit for just $359 in free shipping. And hey, if you're not looking for a suit, Indochino's expanding to casual clothing. You can get made-to-measure chinos. They're going to be your go-to pant, whether you have a suit jacket, whether you have a sweater. It's sweater season here on the East Coast. Any time of year, they are going to fit you comfortably, and you're going to be really excited about how much you paid because the introductory price is only $79. Again, Indochino.com, promo code Barnwell. Those $79 chinos, a $359 premium suit with free shipping today, Indochino.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. Being an offensive lineman in a scheme that is running RPOs. I'm not saying the Chiefs are running a lot of them, but they run a few here and there.
Yeah. Most of the Giants are running it with Eli Manning.
I'm trying to be nice and not talk about the Giants on the podcast. I'm trying to just avoid them for my own sake, for your sake. It's an ex-Giants player. I mean, it's rough. But what I want to ask you about is basically just in terms of blocking on RPOs, I mean, do you think there is ever going to become a point in the NFL where because plays are really successful, because it's such a widespread component, and obviously it's not now, but maybe if it does become more of a widespread component, do you think the league is ever going to crack down on offensive linemen being downfield more so than they do right now, which honestly is not very much at all?
Probably not. And it's a tough spot to be in because I think the refs can't see it all. Like they can't, and they're watching, like if you're a line judge, right, you're not really watching the quarterback hand the ball off or not. You're watching the lineman. And then when the ball's thrown, you're turning your head to where the ball is. I think, in my opinion, it's a tough thing to really totally notice if you're a referee. Will they make it a point of emphasis? Maybe, I guess. But we've seen this year, and I called this, man, all the point of emphasis that we had to start week one, they're no longer around, right? We're not getting rough for the – we're not getting targeting. We're not getting rough in the passer calls anymore. Players have adjusted too, which is important to note. Everyone's adjusted. So I don't think it's going to change very much. I know defenders get upset about it, but I don't see it being. But if a quarterback runs an RPO and he doesn't throw the ball right away, they get called for that because they're often 7 yards downfield.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if it's 7 yards downfield, it's happening. But I'm saying more in that like that sort of like gray area where it's 2 to 3 yards downfield. I mean, do you think it's fair?
I just think if you start doing that, man, guys won't be able to run block anymore because you're like, okay, well, did the quarterback throw the ball? Did he not? What do I do here? So I guess if they want to eliminate RPOs, that's one way to do it because teams probably wouldn't call as much if you don't have linemen committed to selling the run on the RPO. And we don't obviously know if it's going to be passed or not, but I don't think there'll be a change in that. I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, I hope not. I think it's more fun this way, but it does seem like it's weird that you have like this rule that's being broken on these plays. I don't know. It seems like the rule is antiquated given what we're actually seeing on the field come Sundays. And I'm sure that's not the case. I'm sure it's the case with other rules as well, no?
That are antiquated?
Yeah, where it's like, you know, the rule makes sense for a game that maybe was more logical 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, let me think of any rules that are like that.
Maybe like grounding, you know, where it's like, you know, you can spike the ball. That's really technical grounding.
It's fairly obvious. The one rule that I don't quite understand, this is very specific to the NFL and to college, is the 10-second runoff after a review.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't quite get that because let's say you're an offense, right? The call has to be reversed. But, like, you lose 10 seconds for no reason. Like, none of your own fault. Like, you didn't – there's no injury. There's no reason – there's no penalty. Like, the referee stopped the clock to review a play, and you get penalized 10 seconds if the call is reversed. That's not, like, your fault. I know that's not an antiquated rule because it's new because review is relatively new in the day of football. But I don't – that's the one rule that – most of the rules I understand, right? You know, holding, obviously, like, oh, man, down the field, all this stuff. I don't understand that rule.
The reason I think they do it, and I think it's too onerous, is the reason why I think is because basically you're getting a chance to line up and snap the ball. Like if you complete a pass, you still have to run up to the line of scrimmage and get everyone set and then snap the ball. And so if they review it, well, you can run right to the, you can get right at the line of scrimmage for the moment they, they blow the whistle to stop the review, and then you can just run a play. I think it should be 5 seconds and not 10 seconds, because it doesn't take you 10 seconds to complete a pass and then run up to the line of scrimmage.
Well, but they also, they typically don't review the play until you're actually at the line of scrimmage anyway. So you're already set to snap the ball. Mm-hmm. And then you get lose an additional 10 seconds on top of that. Like, you lose. So maybe you're right. 5 seconds, 3 seconds. I mean, it generally takes, if the play is not practiced, mm-hmm. it takes about 16 seconds to complete a pass in bounds and get off a spike. If the play is rehearsed, it can be about 13 to 14. I remember the Lions a couple of years ago.
Yes, I remember this play.
But that was the funny part is, you know, that was a rehearsed play. That's mm-hmm. why it took 14 seconds. Everyone was running to the middle field. They knew that play was happening. Typically about 16 seconds to 17 seconds if it's not rehearsed. So I don't know. I just think it's a weird rule. I don't quite get it. But otherwise, I think the rules are okay. I mean, I don't know. Obviously I'm a lineman. I deal with holding all the time. I think mm-hmm. the holding calls have been better. They're not, you know, they don't call them in unless they're in the hole now. Things like that. And, you know, then, like I said, roughing the passer has been better this year. We had one quarterback hurt with an ACL. Mm-hmm. I'm not counting Nathan Peterman and Josh Allen as being hurt. But it's gone better. We get stars. We get to see Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers this weekend. Imagine that matchup would have been Deshaun Kizer and Tom Brady, or whoever, I don't even know who Tom Brady's backup is against Aaron Rodgers, right?
It would have been much different.
I'm okay with rules being skewed to keep the best players upright.
Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. Let me ask you, and be honest here, Jeff. You're an honest person. I appreciate that. I need to know if you honestly knew this. Were you aware that the Browns could have recovered that free kick last week that the Steelers let pass for a what ended up being an enormous onside kick?
Yeah, why wouldn't you? It's a kickoff.
I don't know. Why did the Steelers not think it was a recoverable kick?
Because they punted it, I guess.
Yeah, because it was a free kick.
You have the option with on a free kick to punt or use a tee. Mm-hmm. So most teams decide to punt. I'm not quite sure why that is. I think the ball hangs up higher. But, it was like there's a free kick. It's a free ball. Browns are wrecked, by the way. Jeez.
Well, you know, I mean, it's obviously a really great thing when you fire your entire offensive infrastructure the week before you're playing the best team in the AFC, no?
With your rookie quarterback, if Jimmy Haslam didn't own the Browns, they would be really attractive to a head coach. But you can't be excited to go to Cleveland. It's a disaster.
That's the thing. Like, if you're Lincoln Riley and you're sitting there and saying, well, I could have basically I can choose between 3 or 4 pro teams. If I want to go coach the NFL, I'm going to have options. I might not be able to coach the Patriots, might not be able to coach the Chiefs, but I'm going to have a few options. And even though Baker Mayfield is the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, why would you want to go work in Cleveland with an ownership that seems to change their mind every 18 months?
Correct. And that's the problem. And Jimmy Haslam probably doesn't even realize that is Lincoln Riley, I think, and this, one of my favorite things ever, by the way, is when people, you know, say, well, Lincoln Riley said he's not going to the NFL. Okay, get over it. Okay. If the Dallas Cowboys come calling, we offer him $10 million a year. How do you not take that job? But you're right. If it wasn't Jimmy Haslam, it was someone else, that's a perfect job for Lincoln Riley. He has all those weapons on offense, has a young, talented defense, in a division with two aging quarterbacks, and the Bengals. Like, I don't see why that's not a great job.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the Chiefs ceiling this year, again, obviously you're a little bit biased. Your brother is the right tackle for the Chiefs, although obviously he may end up losing his job now that he's given up a sack to Von Miller for the first time after playing them about 18 times over the last few years. I mean, what's the ceiling for the Chiefs this season to you?
You know, after games, I text him, like, you know, how he played most of the time, and it's just like, great job, you were born again, nothing happened. and then this week, you know, it was Vaughn's first sack in 5 games against Miz. So I said, look on the positive. You won't give up a sack against him until 2021. So, I thought he'd like that. I mean, the problem with the Chiefs is their defense. You already see this coming, right? They're going to get in the playoffs. They're going to probably, you know, they're going to host the game for sure in the playoffs. Whether or not they have a bye or not is not important to my discussion, really. But they're going to run up against a team that plays that they can't stop. And the Broncos last week, by the way, gave, I think, a good example of how teams should attack the Chiefs, which is run the football.
Yep, absolutely. I mean,
they were down 31-14, just kept running the football. They ended up scoring a touchdown, because that's the way to get after the Chiefs. And when you run the football, you limit opportunities for Pat Mahomes. And the big part of this, people don't understand, is it's not that the Chiefs can't stop the run. It's that it puts pressure on their offense now to be perfect, because if you can't stop the run, you get less possessions. The team, theoretically, you're playing, scores more points. And look, this is going to happen, right? They're going to play the Steelers in the playoffs again. They're going to play the Ravens in the playoffs again. It's going to be Mahomes' first playoff game. We saw against New England. He was a little rattled early in the game. He was throwing the ball high. He missed a wide open, like, wide receiver screen. He never misses. He's not going to be the same guy in the first quarter, probably. He'll be a little rattled. It's a playoff game, of course, right? First playoff game. So I think that they're going to run the same problems they had last year, the year before that. The defense will let them down. The difference is this year is, you know, they have Pat Mahomes, who theoretically should be better than Alex Smith in those situations because he's a better quarterback. But I think they're still a year away. Keep improving that defense. D4 has been a big success this year. The pass rush has been better. But they got to work on the run defense still. And if they can do that, I think next year, I've always said, I thought this year was an 88 year for the Chiefs. Obviously, I was wrong on that. But I always thought 2019 was kind of the year that you could target for them to make a legitimate run to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They have a ton of offensive talent that's still relatively cheap. The defense, of course, they've missed Eric Berry for the entire season. If he comes back, I think that could be a game changer for them. But, I mean, it's going to be a fascinating team to watch in the postseason. I think they can, on their day, beat just about anybody. And if things
they
go
can.
Wrong. Yeah, but if things go wrong, I mean, they're a defense that any team can really exploit, no matter how bad your offense is. So they'll be a fun team to watch come January. Mr. Schwartz, you are all over the internet. I cannot possibly list the amount of places you are writing and contributing. Please, for people who want to check out more of your stuff, please let them know where they can check you out.
Well, my Twitter at Jeff Schwartz, Jeff with a G, is a good spot. But I write for SB Nation and Action Network, and I do one thing for the Athletic a week, either for Philly or for the New York Giants, one. And then I do a nightly radio show on Sirius Pac-12 Radio Monday through Friday. I do ESPN Radio as well on the weekend. So I keep myself fairly busy. Got my Blocks of the Week video about to post later today. So, yeah, man, I need like your gig, man. I need a full-time gig somewhere. I'm working on it.
You deserve it. I absolutely recommend checking out Jeff's stuff. You learn a ton about offensive line. Very entertaining Twitter follow. Jeff, thank you so much.
Take care. Have a good one.
All right. We'll be back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. All right. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. It's still Thursday, November 1st, 2018, but we got a new guest. Well, it's a guest who's been on the show before. Frequent contributor to the show. Excellent work at The Athletic. Unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about a team that is not quite as exciting as the Kansas City Chiefs. It is the Oakland Raiders, and joining us to do that is the Athletic's Ted Wynn. Ted, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm getting through this season. So, like you said, it's been rough, but we're trucking through it.
That's the nicest way to put it. Granted, we talked about it a little bit, or came up earlier today. John Gruden is apparently just overrun with people calling him on his cell phone to come play for the Raiders in 2019. So it seems like things will be good after this season, but certainly I imagine this has to be a disappointing year given even, you know, modest expectations heading into the season.
Yeah, but I gotta say, Terrell Owens calling about playing doesn't count. That's who he's talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know, obviously there are going to be people who want to come play for the Raiders. There's going to be an opportunity there. But I mean, could you have imagined before the year when we were talking about the Raiders that we would be here in, you know, in week 9 and the Raiders would already be without Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack?
No, not at all. I thought they looked good at training camp. I thought they were gearing up to try to win this year. But, you know, everybody got the indication that they were going to keep Khalil Mack. John Gruden came out at a Raider rally and said, "Don't worry, we're going to sign Khalil Mack." And you know, we don't know exactly what happened behind the scenes. There's a lot of conflicting reports, but ultimately, once he got traded, it was just a sign of things to come. And yeah, it's been a bit of a fire sale in Oakland, and everybody's up for evaluation right now.
So, in terms of the Amari Cooper trade, obviously, it's already, you know, a week or two in the past. But in terms of your evaluation of Amari Cooper, I mean, you wrote about him last year, you know, and the success he had in the slot. I mean, is it a situation where you think, you know, he still has what we saw from him in 2015 and 2016, and he just has to be in the right place for him to succeed? Or you think he slipped versus the guy we saw really play, really look like a breakout wide receiver candidate after his first two seasons in the NFL?
I mean, it's hard to say because when you watch the film, there's so many examples of him getting open and he just couldn't get the ball for whatever reason. You know, the protection might have broke down.
Sure.
Carr might not have seen him. So, yeah, I mean, there's just so many times where he was open, didn't get the ball. So that is an encouraging sign for Cooper. Mm-hmm. But then you have to think, why isn't he getting the ball? Maybe he's not running where he's supposed to. Maybe he's freelancing a little bit too much. So you kind of have to ask those questions. But I don't really love the fit in Dallas right now for Cooper.
Why is that?
Well, because Dak Prescott isn't the most accurate quarterback. He's a good deep ball thrower. So if they could find ways to get Cooper the ball deep, then that would be good. Scott Linehan, their offensive coordinator, isn't exactly known for his creativity. You know, in fact, he's been criticized a lot for having kind of a vanilla offense. And the Dallas Cowboys don't have another number one receiver. So Cooper saw a lot of double teams, a lot of attention when he was in Oakland, which is some of the reasons why he just disappeared in some games. So if they don't have somebody to take the attention off of him in Dallas, then what's really going to be different than when he was here in Oakland?
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair. I mean, you have to hope that maybe after the season they do make a change in their coaching staff, maybe bring in some more creative offensive minds to help with Cooper there. But you mentioned, you know, sort of the Raiders scheme and how it had not been necessarily all that creative in years past, or at least last year. I mean, in terms of the Raiders scheme this season, from what you've seen with John Gruden so far, I mean, we talked about the year, we talked about maybe how he would, you know, play with tempo, how he would maybe, you know, reduce some of the play call lengths to try and make it shorter to be a faster team. Do you think they've delivered on some of the schematic things you were expecting before the season?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at a scheme, it was everything I expected, and I really, really liked the scheme. There's a lot of Sean McVay influences. They did shorten a lot of the play calls. You can hear it in their audible system. It's pretty similar to what the Rams do. And it's kind of that modern West Coast where they're blending that West Coast with the spread concepts that we see nowadays. And when the protection is right, you can see the potential the offense has. I think early on, they struggled with the volume that Gruden put in. He wasn't going to ease Carr or the offense into anything. I think he kind of just threw everything at them. And I think that it takes time to kind of pick that up. And it seems like they're getting more comfortable. I mean, one thing that you notice when they were in a no-huddle situation, the no-huddle operation wasn't very smooth. There was miscommunications. And against the Colts, it looked much better, a lot smoother after a bye week. So yeah, when they have protection, the offensive line is playing well, you can see the potential the offense has. So I'm excited about the scheme. That's the one thing that you don't have to worry about Gruden. The scheme is going to be sound.
Yeah, I mean, I watched that Colts game. I covered it in my column, and I was impressed with how Carr played, especially given that, you know, he had lost his number one receiver heading into the week. I mean, he really was operating at a high level. He missed a couple throws here and there. He missed that crossing route late in the game on a third down that, of course, when he got the ball back, they were pretty much down 14 points. But I thought in terms of how he played, you know, he was hitting receivers in stride. He was making smart decisions with the football. And I think, you know, in terms of his development, it seems like, you know, there's been, even though I think the sort of the narrative surrounding him is that he's struggling on a national basis, I think he's actually played a lot better in some cases than maybe people are giving him credit for.
Yeah, so that's the thing. When he's on, he's played extremely well, and when he's not playing too well, it's been really bad. I mean, the games he played well was against the Denver Broncos. He completed over 90% of his passes. He played really well against the Browns, and he threw for over 400 yards that game. Obviously, against the Colts, he played extremely well. The offense was barely stopped. I think they only stopped twice, and one of them was because Jordy Nelson slipped on a route. He was open, and like you said, that Seth Robert missed on the mesh concept. So yeah, I think Carr is a really good fit in his offense. And a couple games before the Colts game, Colton Miller was hurt. He had an MCL sprain, and the protection really suffered. And Carr was just really, really. He didn't have a chance against the Chargers and Seahawks because he was under siege so much. But I think that through that experience, he was forced to learn how to play under pressure, and which has been a criticism of him for years, even when he was good in 2016, was that he couldn't play well when the pocket was collapsing, but since he was forced to do it, he made some plays, and to give him credit, he stood strong in the pocket, and it came out against the Colts where he didn't have to deal with as much pressure, but when he did, he played well. One of his touchdowns, he avoided two free rushers, stepped up in the pocket, and threw that touchdown to Brand LaFell, so that was pretty impressive in his development.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, in terms of those rookie tackles, it's not only Colton Miller on the left side, but with Donald Penn going down, it's been Brandon Parker, their rookie third-round pick, on the right side. You know, obviously, it's still way too early to say, but are there promising signs for how they're playing so far?
Yeah, Miller for sure. He's still kind of a mess from a fundamental perspective, but he's cleaning his technique up. And he's so athletic that even when he has a couple missteps, he's able to recover and kind of just push that defensive end past Carr. And he had his best game, I think, of his career against the Colts. And the Colts are actually a pretty good pass rushing team. I believe coming into the game, they were second in the league in sacks. So that was pretty impressive to see. Parker hasn't played that well, but he had his best game of the season against the Colts as well. So that's definitely encouraging to see.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll be back here with Ted talking more about the Raiders in a moment. But first, want to talk about our pals at SeatGeek. You know SeatGeek. We love SeatGeek here at the Bill Barnwell Show because whenever I go anywhere to purchase tickets for an event, first place I look is on SeatGeek. And I'm not going to lie, pretty much every time it's the last place I look because I'm always getting a good deal on the seats I want to the games, concerts, and events I want. I'm going to a Rangers game in January. I think I've been once before, but wanted to go check out the Rangers. I live very close to Madison Square Garden. I haven't been in a while. I said, well, why don't I go on SeatGeek, check out the event. I got a great price. I'm going to bring my parents. It'll be a wonderful time. Say hello to me if you see me. As long as you got the tickets on SeatGeek. If you didn't get the tickets on SeatGeek, please leave me alone. But if you use SeatGeek, you're going to get a great deal. I will be friends with you at the Rangers game. If you happen to see me there, maybe I will... I was going to say I was going to buy you a soda, but sodas are probably very expensive. SeatGeek does not have anything to do with sodas at events. Strictly tickets. I understand if that's confusing. Let me make it clear. Only tickets with SeatGeek, but SeatGeek is going to get you such a good deal on those tickets, you might be able to afford a soda or two at the game. Maybe even a beer if you're so inclined. And even better, if you haven't used SeatGeek before, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase today. You can probably do it tomorrow as well, but why not do it today? Why not download the SeatGeek app? Why not go to SeatGeek.com? Look for the tickets for the event you want, and at checkout, enter in promo code Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Promo code Barnwell, get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase today. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to the show. In terms of the second half of the season, in terms of Derek Carr's development in advance of what could be a very tumultuous offseason if things don't go the right way, what are sort of the markers you're hoping to see from Derek Carr? I mean, is there a number he has to hit or a way he has to play or a specific element of his game you would hope to see improves over the second half of the year?
Yeah, I think just cutting down the bad interceptions and playing better in the red zone has to be key for him. He's been able to move the ball between the 20s. But throughout his career, interceptions really haven't been a big issue with him. But for whatever reason, this year, he's forcing the issue, and he's thrown a lot of bad interceptions and really bad times that kind of cost the Raiders a game. So he didn't throw an interception against the Colts, but moving forward in the season, you want to see him be more careful with the ball, but still be aggressive, but just not, you know, throw the ball into or get the team into bad positions. And you want to see him be a lot more efficient in the red zone.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that's going to be the key difference maker for him is how he performs in the red zone. I mean, if he does not improve, if he still has this sort of inconsistent year where he looks great for stretches and also mediocre for stretches, I mean, do you think the Raiders would consider seriously moving on from Derek Carr this offseason and going after a quarterback? Or do you think it's more just, you know, they're going to rely on Carr and sort of hope to build around him in the years to come?
I think that they're going to give him at least one more year. And I think he'll have at least next year to really prove himself, unless somebody comes out with some crazy offer for Carr where Gruden just can't say no. But I'm not totally in love with next year's quarterback class. I know everybody loves Justin Herbert, but I think that he has more to prove. He has to play more in big games to really solidify that number one pick position. And the year after, if Tua comes out, I really like Tua's game.
Yeah.
So I could see the Raiders giving Carr one more year, and if he doesn't do too well, then maybe go after a quarterback next year when they also have two first-round draft picks.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think this is a situation where sort of the teardown is done, where it was just they didn't want to sign Mac, and then they got an offer for Cooper that they couldn't turn down, and they're going to kind of stick with the veteran core they have on offense with the interior linemen and Derek Carr, and then sort of work with the weapons around him, to improve the weapons around him, I should say? Or do you think that it's still kind of a, you know, an evaluation period for the entire roster at this point?
I think it's for the offensive line. I think they're pretty set on keeping the offensive line intact. I think they're going to give Carr some time. But I do think everybody else is up for evaluation. Gruden has come out and said he wants Marshawn Lynch to return another year, so that's another piece if he does come back. But I do think that everybody else on a roster is up for evaluation.
In terms of that running back situation, you mentioned Marshawn Lynch. Obviously, he's on IR for the next 7 weeks or so, I believe. I mean, are you – obviously, the running game was pretty good against the Colts. Do you think that's going to be how it shakes out going forward, and that it'll be Doug Martin on first and second down and then Jalen Richard in that change of pace role? I mean, do you think DeAndre Washington will get more reps, or do you think it's kind of just – they're just going to get by with Martin and Richard?
I think DeAndre Washington will see more reps. They kept him on the roster even though he's injured, so I think they do like what he could provide. So I can see Washington get more reps. Richard has been one of the Raiders' most consistent offensive players as threatened the passing game, and he's just really elusive, and every opportunity he's gotten, he's made the most out of it. So I expect to see a lot more Jalen Richard as well.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Richard, even if he's not going to be a every down back at the NFL level, even if he just doesn't have the body type for it, it seems like he could carve out a bigger role. I mean, just given how productive he is in a small sample. In terms of the defense, I mean, obviously sort of the point of contention in a lot of places, I know myself been thinking about this, you know, it's been that you're playing a secondary that's a lot of old guys. I mean, it's Leon Hall, it's Rashawn Melvin, it's Reggie Nelson, who was just benched. It was Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, who retired but was playing regularly until last week. Carl Joseph, Garian Conley, two former first-round picks, have not been playing. Josie's been hurt a little bit, but, I mean, they've been benched or not playing many snaps when they have been healthy. Neither was traded at the trade deadline. Do you think this is going to be a Raiders team that's more realistic about the players they're playing in the secondary over the second half of the year in terms of trying to develop young talent?
Yeah, I think that they took some big steps towards doing that against the Colts. They even deactivated Rashawn Melvin and Reggie Nelson. So they're playing Eric Harris, who's the second-year player. Gary Conley got a lot of snaps after being getting his snaps cut down the previous weeks. Darrell Worley, the veteran, but he's still extremely young, too.
Yeah, for sure.
So they are going through a youth movement on defense. And I think part of the reason why they benched Gary Conley is because they were trying to get him to learn a new technique that just be more aggressive and bump and run, use his motor technique. And he was having a lot of trouble with coverage breakdown. So when he was in man-to-man coverage, he played really well. But when they had to use different coverages, I think there were times where he got a little confused and kind of messed up his assignment. So those were the reasons why he was benched. But he came back as a Colt. He gave up that one touchdown, the first touchdown, to that tight end with that amazing one-handed catch. But that was just a really good toss and catch there. So it's hard to blame him for that. But other than that, he played extremely well. So that was a good sign for the Raiders secondary.
I mean, there's just no covering Mo Alley Cox. I mean, he's uncoverable when he's at his best. He just can't stop Mo Alley Cox. In terms of the Raiders' performance over the second half of the season, obviously the playoffs are out of the question, really, at 1-6. I mean, this is a rebuilding team. John Gruden will tell you as much. Is there something you're looking for? Like is it if the defense is in the top half of the league over the second half of the season, that's a success? Or if they go, you know, 3-5, that's a success? I mean, what is like the marker where you'll be sitting here come January 1st and you'll be excited about what's going to happen with the Raiders in 2019?
Well, they need a better pass rush. They are by far the worst pass rushing team in the league, and it's not even close. So they have three rookie defensive linemen that have flashed. Mo Hurst has consistently been extremely good for the Raiders. He's made a lot of plays. He didn't have a great game against Colts, but for most of the season, he's played extremely well. Mm-hmm. P.J. Hall, their second-round draft pick, he's flashed some, but he just hasn't been very consistent. Mm-hmm. Arden Key has gotten close to sacking the quarterback, but you know they'll get out of his grasp or he'll get held. So he just hasn't been able to finish. But like I said, those guys have been flashing, but they just haven't been very consistent. So if that four-man pass rush could get better towards the end of the season and you start seeing more pressures and more sacks from them, that'll be a very encouraging sign for the Raiders moving forward.
Yeah, and I think the good thing about when you think about the Raiders moving forward is even if they struggle this year, even if they do finish with one of the top few picks in the draft, and even if that pass rush doesn't really develop, by all accounts, and I'm not a college football analyst by any means, but from what I read, this seems like it is a very deep class in terms of defensive linemen who can possibly impact the pass rush. So it could be a thing where it does struggle throughout this year, but could be much improved this time next season.
Yeah, exactly. And it'd be encouraging to have somewhat of a pass rush going and then adding another piece to it. And then that way, you know, you could, the Raiders have a potentially stronger pass rush heading into next season. And some people are calling Thursday, this tonight's game against the Niners, the Nick Bosa Bowl, because, that's the guy everybody's looking at the number one pick right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So one more question, not Raiders specific. You are someone who watches as much football as anyone. Watches it from an X's and O's perspective. Is there a team, you hear about this a lot with like an NBA league pass where it's like the team that is entertaining perhaps more so than their record to watch closely an NBA league pass. Is there a team that you would say over the second half of the season you're going to watch more on NFL Game Pass than perhaps people would expect? Like, is there like a sleeper team who you think is fun, even if they're not necessarily good, but just you like watching over the second half of the year?
I want to see the Jets offense develop because just not because of Sam Darnold, but just because I hear so many good things about Jeremy Bates, their offensive mm-hmm. coordinator over there. And I haven't really studied the scheme that much, but a lot of people that I respect give him a lot of credit and say he's an extremely smart guy. So that's the scheme that I'd be paying attention to.
See,
I will probably check out a little more.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting you to say the Jets, but now I'm going to watch them. I mean, I watched the Bears game yesterday. They didn't really do a lot. They were playing the Bears. The Bears are a very good defense on the road in Chicago. But yeah, I mean, even in that, you think about that Lions game, that was a national game where they showed a lot of stuff I don't think people were expecting. So, you know, maybe limited by their receiving core having a bunch of injuries, but I think a team that might be fun to watch over the second half of the year. So Ted, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Where can people check out more of what you're working on?
Check me out on The Athletic, and you can follow me on Twitter at @FB_film_analysis.
Ted, it's always a pleasure. We'll have you back on later in the year, hopefully with some more exciting Raiders stuff to discuss. But always a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on, sir.
Yeah, always good to talk to you, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks so much to our guest today. Very X's and O's intensive show. Love doing that with Jeff Schwartz and Ted Wynn. Check those guys out on Twitter, Jeff Schwartz, FB_film_analysis. Highly recommended follows. Fun stuff there. More NFL coming next week. We're going to recap week 9, the official halfway point of the NFL season coming next Monday. I've got my mid-season awards column coming. Fun stuff. Check out on the Bill Barnwell Show on ESPN.com. Thanks for listening.